Hey, today I got a return guest. Dr. Lodge McCammon is joining us. And he's published a book called Schooled, The Story of an Education. Lots to learn. You're going to like it. Thanks for listening. Enjoy.
You are listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast for educators, helping you help kids achieve their dreams. And now here's Steve with this week's show.
Dr. Lodge McCammon's instructional methods, research stories, and songs have inspired thousands around the world to make significant changes in the way they teach and learn. Most notably, he has developed resources and strategies that have helped many instructors move from passive, lecture-based classrooms towards active, student-centered learning environments. He is an author, musician, teacher, thinker, learner, designer, creator, keynote speaker, and workshop instructor. He has a great sense of humor. Just listen to a couple of his The Lodge McCammon songs like She Was Insane or watch and listen to Harmony and Trophy Wife. By the way, see if you think he has been cloned. Then you can watch other videos and see that he has friends who have been cloned as well, like in Say Yes and I Like You. A couple of my favorite songs are The Bitterness and Blah Blah. And I'm going to put links to these in the show notes so you can go check them out. By the way, I just wonder if there's any musical instrument that he can't play. He's inspiring when he conducts workshops. He helps you feel that you could engage even the most difficult kids, and he helps to reignite your fire and passion for your profession, teaching, and working to help kids achieve their dreams. He reminds you of just how much fun working with kids can be when you unleash your exceptional you. Oh yeah, and with everything else he does, he has also just published a book called Schooled, The Story of an Education. Everyone, please welcome Dr. Lodge McCammon to the show. Say hi to everyone, Lodge.
Hey, everyone, Lodge. Oh, wait. Yes. Hello. And Steve, thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here. And Lodge, thank you so much for all this cool stuff that you do. Welcome back. We talked back at episodes 10, 11, and then about a year or so later on episode 54. And it's great to have you back on. I've had the chance to experience your student-centered teaching with teachers and administrators and learning how to incorporate music, movement, and creativity in the social studies classroom. We've also discussed flipping the classroom as well as your project to create a song for each of the states in the U.S. Additionally, we've looked at your cool paper slide and one-take video activities for getting kids engaged in the lessons. You're an incredible thinker, musician, teacher, and creator. Today I'd like to focus on your book, Schooled, and your music, but before we go there, let's talk about a couple videos that you've created. One is titled, Don't Wait for Permission to Share Your Ideas. Could you start there, just talk a little bit about that video?
Sure, and before we jump into that, I just want to say thank you for all the awesome stuff that you create. I think you're almost up to 200 episodes now, right?
Yes, and I'm getting there.
That's amazing. That's incredible. And thanks for sharing all that information with all of us. And I from time to time, I enjoy going and seeing what you're working on. A couple things jumped. One of the most recent ones I listened to was, I can't remember her last name, but it was a teacher instructor named Katie, talking about some brain research. Really enjoyed that one. And then one of my favorites is the ABC. It was like ABC of how we learn program. Or something.
Yeah.
My favorite part of that one was with you made this book advertisement for it. And it was just classic. It reminded me of a really great infomercial. You're like, hey, listen now, here we go. So thank you for everything that you do for educators all over the world. I would imagine. And again, it's great. It's great to be chatting with you again. Always awesome to chat with you.
Thanks.
But yes. Of course. Don't wait for permission to share your ideas. It just seems many times that I see people hesitate to share new ideas. There are so everywhere I go, when I talk to people, I'm astonished at how many great ideas there are out there, how many great solutions that people hold on to. And it seems like there's a hesitation to share those kind of publicly, if you will, on social media or whatnot. But at the same time, we champion ideas like TED Talks. And TED Talks are great. They give people an opportunity to stand on a stage and present those ideas. And I've done a couple of TEDx talks, and they're fantastic. And I, would support anybody to try to do a TEDx talk or a TED talk, of course. But to share great ideas, all you really need these days, which is incredible. It's an incredible situation that we find ourselves in. All you really need is your cell phone, the video recording mode in your cell phone, and prop it up in your car, your living room, your classroom, outside while you're taking a walk, and just share an idea. Video record yourself presenting an idea and post it on social media. Those can get hundreds, thousands, hundreds of thousands of views, and you don't need a stage. You don't need lights. You don't need fancy equipment. Everybody has the capability in their pocket to share really high quality ideas. And this is a concept I'm really, really excited about.
You know, it's one of the things that's really cool is that when I first stumbled into the stuff that you did on Flipping the Classroom, and I learned about the one take videos, you know, at that time, the transition happens fast. You go from the little flip cameras and stuff like that to suddenly we're using the phone. And it's amazing how quickly this has happened. Cause just like what you were talking about with that little commercial that I did, I like to do little videos on my YouTube where I say things about some of the books that I find, cause I look for ones that are easy to use type books in the classroom. And, I went online onto YouTube and found a couple of kids who were using their phones and teaching people how to use their phones to do the videos. And I thought, this is nice, man. So
yeah.
That's so cool because you're right. It's like, you know, we're in this world now. It's so easy to do it. So do it.
Right. And of course, as we'll explore over the next little while here in this podcast, there are some barriers to it.
Yes.
So, let's talk about those in a minute.
The second video that I want you to talk about is you tell this story about the crabs in the bucket. The video is called Being Exceptional and Escaping the Bucket. What message do you hope that the listeners get from that one? And I'm going to tie all this together, those of you listening.
Sure. Well, it's a good next thing to talk about based on what I just said, that, you know, in my experience, the crab mentality is a metaphor that's used in usually businesses and organizations to describe a scenario where you have an exceptional person who has new ideas about how things should be done. And many times in organizations, when you have someone like that, they will be others in the organization will try to knock them down. And the metaphor goes like this, that if you put a bunch of crabs in a bucket, like actual crabs in a bucket, and one tries to climb out, literally the other ones will latch on to that crab and pull it down. So it's a great metaphor for this scenario going on in these organizations, that a person who's exceptional, who has new creative, innovative ideas about how to improve productivity, how to improve efficiency, how to do more with less, will many times be a target for so many people around them for a number of reasons, not the least of which is the fear of change. You know, if I'm in an organization and there's a really exceptional person who's promoting an innovative way of going about business, if I allow that person to be successful, I may have to change what I'm doing. And if I look down the road, I may not be good for my position anymore. And that's a really scary concept. So we see a lot of what I call psychological venom going on in organizations that really attempt and target to tear down these exceptional people with these new creative, innovative ideas. And it puts a lot of stress, actually, on exceptional people. You have to grow thick skin. You have to be able to let go and sort of, you know, understand those people have concerns and figure out ways of assuaging those concerns, but you have to sort of look past it, because there are kind of three steps here, or there are three things that can happen. If you're an innovative, exceptional person, and sort of the unfortunate, in a way, the unfortunate thing is when people start to try to tear you down, that's how you know you're onto something. And it's a hard pill to swallow, because as soon as that starts happening, and the worse the venom gets, the more you're onto something. So you have three choices, really. You can let it bother you. You can just be like, oh, I don't like people being mean to me, so I'm just going to let this go. The second thing is you can get completely consumed with it. Go home every day and cry and be like, I feel really bad. And then you never continue along your innovative path. Or you can say, that's an indicator that things are working. I'm kind of rocking the boat in a good way. I have to understand that, let it go, and keep working toward my goal. Those are your three choices. So, of course, what I would suggest is let it go, keep working toward your goal.
That's awesome. And, you know, it's funny, having grown up in Florida, we used to go blue crabbing all the time. And I've seen that crab in the bucket thing, literally. And the analogy works very well because I've experienced it as well as seen others experience it. You know, the human version of it, where they just want to pull you back down because you're so right. They, you know, the reason why it's easier to attack you, to try and get you to shut up and sit down type thing, because it might make a difference and make them change what they do.
Sure.
So awesome.
Right. But it's actually a good thing. It doesn't feel good, but it's a good thing. It's a necessary thing. If everybody agreed with what you were saying, if you're saying things that everybody agrees with, you're doing it. That's not innovative. That's a thing that if there's no pushback, then it's not pushing any boundaries. It's not making any change.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, it's tough. It's a tough road. It really is.
Definitely. So let's, before we get into Schooled, because that's where all this is going to come together, because I really think that those two videos really get into the meat of what you talk about in your book. I have to say that if anybody does not really know you, all they got to do is watch your music videos that you do. And I specifically mean the ones called The Lodge McCammons, now, is that all music that you write, or are some of it by other people or such, or that you're performing?
Yeah, most of the songs, those music videos of live performances in my living room, actually the living room that I'm sitting in right now, are songs that I've written. I have worked on songs that were like co-writes as well. I think one of the Lodge McCammons co-writes was a co-write with my good friend Ryan Mullaney. But yeah, most of those, I think all the other ones are original songs that I've written.
That's awesome. What's cool is that knowing that you're writing these songs, plus, you know, here we are, we're being brought into your living room, and there's your sound, there's all your equipment, the musical instruments, there we go. Don't know why that was difficult to say. But the and then not only do we get to hear you sing and perform along with your friends and colleagues who are singing and performing as well, and it's going to go out there. Here's your song that you've written, and here's your interpretation of it, along with they're playing on it as well as singing. And it's so awesome, because then along with that, you have the more serious songs, and then you have the ones that have the kind of tongue-in-cheek humor happening in them. And then right along with that, then you also have, you know, you can't help but notice that either you have a lot of brothers and you've been cloned, or got some cool special effects going on in there, to the point that they even do different things while it's going on. And just talk a little bit more about, because you have the Lodge McCammons, and then you have hashtag Lodges Lodge. So can you just talk about where that idea came from and what you got going there?
Absolutely. A few years ago, I probably got that wrong, but let's say 2.5 years ago or so, I realized that, you know, I've been playing music my whole life. I started playing violin when I was 2 years old, but I realized about 2.5 years ago that I wasn't much of a performer. I mostly recorded music my whole life. I had been in recording studios, had recording studios, and I went to do a performance at an event, and I did a very poor job. And during the time I was performing, I was having a panic attack because I'm not used to playing in real time. Like, you can work note by note, you can piece things together. And I love that process, the production process of assembling a song. But sitting in front of an audience and just playing a song is a very different skill set. And I realized, and it was upset by the fact that I was not good at that skill set. I mean, I was quite awful. Even having played for 35 years, I was kind of awful at playing live. And so this, the hashtag Lodge is Lodge was the kind of response. I'm a fairly obsessive person. I realized that I failed at that. So how I solved that is I created a video studio in my recording studio and have spent the last 2.5 years, I've probably recorded 120 live songs in my living room and just muscled through it. It's just like, okay, I'm not good at that. I want to be good at that. I'm going to do it over and over and over and over and over. I'm going to stand in front of the camera. I'm going to turn on the lights and I'm going to play a song. And the first one I ever did live in the living room is much different than the most recent one. You can all sorts of physical behaviors, the ability to play, the panic attacks have diminished greatly. So it's just a way to train myself to be a high quality performer. And so the hashtag Lodge is Lodge came from a buddy of mine named Wilson, who I have played a couple songs with in the past couple of years. He's come over and we've played some of his songs. He's played some of mine. So it's a collaborative effort. And the first time he ever posted one of these songs we did together, he said, "Oh, this is live from Lodge is Lodge." And I was like, "Ah, I'm hashtagging that." And so Lodge is Lodge. So anyway, but I'm a multi-instrumentalist. I play a bunch of different instruments. And it occurred to me early on when I was doing these live from the living room videos that I could split the screen, you know, crop the screen in three different segments and put three of me across those different segments and essentially play music with myself. It's kind of the multi-track recording process, but visually. And they're a lot of fun to do. They're a lot more work than just standing up playing one song. But that, I think that's what you're referring to with the Lodge McCammons. So the clones, really.
It's awesome because it's neat because with knowing, you know, it's obviously it's you and doing whatever you're doing at the time when you're playing that part. And so it's cool because when it comes together, then it looks like musicians on a stage who, you know, who do have their different mannerisms and things like this, like looking or tapping or doing something that's going on. And it's pretty cool that you do that because it is very seamless. I mean, when you're watching on a computer screen, you're like, now that's cool. It's not like, you know, it's very seamless. So it's awesome.
I'm glad you enjoy them. It allows me to explore all my different multiple personalities.
I love it. Cause it's, you just, yeah, those listening, you're just going to have to, I'll put links for these things. You just got to go watch him. And then later he does the same thing with his, friends. And so you have them wearing different, outfits and stuff. And it's pretty cool. Cause it really is done very well. So thanks for experimenting with that. It's so cool. And one of the things I got to come back to something that you said before that, you're talking about, getting used to, you know, the differences in your videos. And I don't know at what point, She Was Insane was done, in your numbers, but that to me is an example where, like when you get to the line, She Was Insane, you look at the camera to make that point. And I love it. Cause it emphasizes that point.
So indeed there's the first video I ever did live in the room by myself was a song called A E I O U. And I think, you know, two and a half years ago, I think that's right. And you'll see if you watch that video, just all sorts of physical behaviors. Like I don't look at the camera. I'm kind of awkwardly looking around, like I'm very tense. And then something like Insane, which was number, let's say 100, close to 100. I had 100 songs at that point, much more relaxed. And yeah, just the physical behaviors, being able to kind of, you know, cheekily look at the camera during certain parts and moving around more. And those things matter. I mean, it's teaching myself how to be a performer, not just standing up stiffly playing a song. There's so much to learn. And I never would have learned it without this process.
It's so cool. Cause that, I think that She Was Insane makes the point because I wasn't expecting it. It made me laugh out loud. It was when you looked and then say the line. So very cool. I just think all of that lends itself to this whole idea, what you talk about in your, you know, over time and what, how you became who you are today and focusing on education and such. And it just shows your creativeness and your willingness to step out there and to go outside that, to reach outside that bucket. So let's, so keep on doing that stuff, by the way. That's awesome. I look forward to the new ones all the time. So let's shift to school, the story of an education. In the introduction, you note the original working title for this book was The Worst Book About Education Ever Written. Okay, I can't go any further without getting you to explain that to everybody.
The Worst Book About Education Ever Written. As I was writing this about a year and a half ago, I really sat down and started putting together this story that I wanted to tell with all these different parts and trying just narrowing it down. Where does the story start? Where does it end? What is my audience? Who might read this thing? How it should be written? And to be honest with you, it's very much connected to the crab mentality that we were just discussing, that honestly, I was scared. It was part of my fear that people might judge me harshly for having opinions. And I have a PhD. I've been working in education for a long time. I was a classroom teacher. I'm very passionate about it. I'm very passionate about helping people. Lingering fear that sharing informed and what I consider somewhat intelligent opinions will be attacked. So it was a form of protection, really. It was a shield that it helped me write the book. It helped me be honest in this book, because I'm saying, you know, the book used to start out by saying, hey, this book is called The Worst Book About Education Ever Written, because I might say some things that bother you. But just if something bothers you, close the book, read the title, and then keep reading, because I've already said it's the worst book about education. So you don't get upset. You don't get that as an option. Close the book, read the title, keep reading, kind of thing. But you know, as I went through it, and I love that title too. I just think it'd be hilarious to be the author of the worst. I'd love for people to say that. Oh, you're Logic Cameron. He's the author of the worst book about education ever written.
Great introduction for keynoting.
That's right. Hey, we have him. We have the guy. But you know, as I kept, you know, revising and editing and went through it, I thought that, and as we'll explore a little bit more here in the next few minutes, School, The Story of an Education was a more appropriate title, because I wanted to put out there that I'm just telling a story. This is just what happened to me, and here are the things that came out of my head based upon my experiences. And moreover, I wanted it to be a story because I want to inspire other people to tell their stories. My story is not the only story. It's not the most important story. It's a story. And everybody's got these stories. You know, don't wait for permission to write a book. You know, don't wait for permission to share your ideas. And I was hoping, and I still am hoping, that the fact that I shared my story makes other people say, oh, I can do that.
And, you know, and that's what, and I got to tell you, that's exactly what, you know, we go back to when I first talked about, before I had met you, but where I had just stumbled upon your videos online and stuff about the flipped classroom and so forth. And then I got a chance to meet you and work with you and stuff. And it's that inspired me to go, you know, he's doing this stuff. I can do this. I can figure out the YouTube channel. Of course, my first go around at it, that's why there's a second go around at it.
But iteration, it's an iteration.
Thank you. And you know, and that's what we have to be willing to do, is, you know, go out there and try and do, and you're such a perfect example of that, because you show that in all the different stuff that you do. And I love that, and this, and your book that fits right in with what we're talking about. So so going into this, I want to get into this idea of, you know, in chapter one you comment, even though I might be pleased with the way I turned out, I have to believe that maybe it's in spite of my schooling. So I'm guessing that this would be one of those thoughts that you're worried that people are going to, you know, attack or get after, considering what your answer is going to be.
Well, it wasn't one of those, but now I'm nervous about that too.
Sorry.
No, not at all. Not at all. I don't think anybody would be shocked at that comment per se, and how it's explained. And that there is a significant amount of research out there that says that potentially the fact that your parents and your parents' influence on you has a much bigger impact on your success across a number of different measures than your schooling. You know, your parents are more impactful on your growth and development than the teachers you have in school. And I was just reflecting on my own experience. School for me wasn't very exciting. I didn't love it. Most of the time I was bored and sitting passively, and didn't mean I was terrible at it, but you know, I just reflected upon, I didn't really love my schooling, but I turned out to be someone who's very passionate about school. Like, I'm passionate about learning, and my parents are extremely passionate about learning. My parents are extremely successful in what they've chosen to do in their different areas. We had tons of books growing up. My parents were always reading and reading to us. I had a recording studio in the house I grew up in. So I would sit in school all day, sitting down, staring up, going from class to class, and then go home and record music.
Wow.
And live in this incredible world of creation and excitement. And then the next morning, go back to school. And then come home and record music and be in this rich environment where my parents every day pushed me to be better, to create more, to think deeper about these things that I was doing and thinking. So I don't mean to say that school has no value or anything like that. It's not an attack. I'm just saying that I'm just reflecting upon the fact that I have read this research that parents are important on the school, on kids' development. And looking at my own development, saying, you know, maybe my parents are a big factor in how I turned out the way I am.
And I understand that thought, because that's, you know, it's just like with you run into that a lot. Because with some kids, you look and you go, my gosh, man, how you've managed to do all this with all the things that have happened within your family, and yet you are able to be successful. And then those who are not. Sure. And, you know, with my own, I think it's, you know, that they pushed, they made sure they wanted, you know, you to read. They had books all around. They encouraged, you know, getting involved in different activities and such, and just having and encouraged that type of thing. So like, you know, I played trumpet and did that for a long time, and never knew that it would end up helping me out as a principal, because I ended up playing in the marching band and stuff in the stands. But yeah. You know, it's helping me connect with kids and stuff. And you know, and it's one of those things that that started when I was in third or fourth grade, and you know, and those types of things that help you become who you're going to be down the road, and be willing to try and do different things. And that's so so important. And it's just interesting, because I know what you mean, because when you look at some of the stuff, in spite of some of the things that are going to happen, like sitting in the classroom and doing your best not to do something that might cause an issue, that would be me, because just wanting to go do something else, because I was a good kid, I didn't get in trouble, I was Steve, I didn't, you know, I did, but believe me, there's a big part of me that wanted to, come on, let's do something.
That's right.
You know? So I,
but the cool thing I'll add to this is that, you know, for students though, I don't want to minimize the impact of teachers, educators, principals, leaders, anything like that. For students who are maybe somewhat lacking at home, you know, don't have the support systems, don't have all these opportunities, school can be a bastion. It can be a beacon of light for those students. It's the teachers, the leaders in those schools that can take a student who is doesn't have the greatest opportunities at home and give them those great opportunities. So I think that's awesome.
Yeah, it is. That's, and you're so right on the money, because that it at any time, any one person, anybody who you're going to end up be in their classroom might be that person who's going to help you make those connections and inspire you and make you want to create and so forth, which is so cool. So, you know, one of my favorite sentences in your book creates a definite picture, and surely one that I did not expect. It goes like this, and this is what I got to tell you. You got to, in reading his book, he's going to use sentences to paint pictures that are going to make you go, oh my gosh, I can't stop here. I got to keep reading. So this would be one of them. All right. And they're throughout the book. So Lodge, good, you know, kudos on the way you do this, because it is written, you have a nice writing style, and it works really well, and it makes you want to know more, beginnings of sentences like this are going to just lay it out there, so you make sure you read more. So here goes. It starts this way. After 2 years of shed life, I needed a change. Okay, could you share with the audience just a little bit about this, and what you're talking about living in the shed?
Yeah. Oh, the shed. I graduated from college in 1999 with a degree in economics, and I really had no idea what to do. I had no path. I hadn't really thought about it at all. So I moved out to Los Angeles to play music, learn a little bit about the music business, and then eventually moved to Nashville to do the same, living with a few friends of mine who were in the country music scene there. And then still listless after, I mean, that was only 6, 7, 8 months or something of traveling around to those different places. I still had no idea what to do. And at the time, my sister and my new brother-in-law, they got married in December of 1999. They had a house in Maryville, Tennessee, which is the college town, or the town the college is in that I went to, where I went to college. They had a shed, and it's not a fancy shed, like kind of a tool shed, like an extension, a bigger tool shed. It had no heat or air conditioning. It had one like extension cord going from the house to the shed. And I asked if I could move into the shed until I figure out what it is that I want to do. I think I said something like, you know, like a month or two, and then I'll go do something else. And that month or two turned into over 2 years.
Wow.
I lived in this shed for over 2 years. And it was just really weird. It was really weird. And, you know, my parents having to answer questions about, oh, what's Lodge doing? And they're like, well, Lodge is living in a shed, you know, who knows? It was, you know, I had really long hair, and I was playing lots of music and hanging out, you know. It was weird. And especially going from the shed, you know, living in this totally unstructured environment. But again, the shed was a creative studio. The whole space was a recording studio to document ideas and think deeply about these ideas and play music and continue to grow my craft, to continue to expand my music collection and work with different people. It was a space to do that. It just went on a long, long time, and then moved from that totally unstructured environment to a high school teaching classroom was whiplash. It was crazy.
I can only imagine, because that's what you know. Part of the reason why I wanted to bring this up is that there's all kinds of things happening here, and you know, you even referenced that on the day of graduation with your degree in economics, you're kind of like, I'm not sure what I want to do, and then the shed becomes kind of like that ability to kind of discover that for you, And like you just said, to go from this unstructured, completely unstructured, living in a shed and doing whatever you want, which you were creating, and then you step into that teacher role where, I guess they were a little more interested in you being a little more lockstep. Would that be a way of just saying it?
That's one way. That's a nice way of putting it. Yeah.
Nice.
And no. I mean, you know, it's like the opposite environment. You know, I mean, there are bells, and it's a completely structured environment. So it was tough. It was very tough. I mean, teaching is tough to begin with, and it was just tough to kind of shake that mindset as well.
Well, do you think that the shed in a way kind of has, you know, is part of that creative person who you are? I mean, I don't think I have many friends who would opt for the shed, except for the idea of what you did with the idea. You know, it's part of that it's allowing you to be creative and to do those other things. But do you think that it has any impact, or just basically says a little bit about this is who you are. This allowed you to be you. I don't know if that made sense.
Yeah, no. I frequently think about it like this. I went to, you know, I deprived myself kind of in a way, you know, I went to this shed to find myself, to explore who it is that I am, to start that path, to start walking on that path of self-discovery, self-reflection, because there weren't a whole lot of distractions there. I mean, I was playing music. I was doing a couple of things outside the shed, of course, physically outside the shed. But to be clear, I didn't have a job. I didn't have any responsibilities at all. And there was just a lot of time on self-reflection. And it devolved into sort of negative self-reflection. Like, what am I doing? Why can't I put anything together? Why can't I think of anything to do? Why don't I want to do anything? I don't get this. And it spun, you know, it spiraled. I wouldn't say it was all like super positive and awesome, but it really did help me establish an understanding of myself. You know, having that extended period of time, I really know myself better. And I was able to, when I decided to do something, oh boy, did I do it. You know, I got really, really locked into it, because I think that was the stepping off point, you know, having sort of an empty life and being so consumed with filling it with this thing, with education, with teaching, just filling up all those empty spaces with this passion, this thing. And maybe I took it too far, but I took it pretty far.
Nice. Yes. Yes. You really get a good feeling for what you just said, that you did take it a little far. So we're going to skip over a little bit here, and we're going to get to this thought, because you do become a teacher and you go into this world and you're going to be teaching, and it's here that you're going to experience, I think you're going to start realizing that this is, you want to do things differently. And, you know, but one of the things that you have to find out right off the bat is that, and you say this, here's one of those sentences: after I reconciled with the stigma of becoming a teacher, you know, the whole those who can't do thing, I couldn't help but want to know where, I really screwed up that sentence there. Let me try it again. Your sentence is, after I reconciled with the stigma of becoming a teacher, you know, the whole those who can't do thing, you know, that right there in itself speaks volumes, because you become a teacher and then you realize that there are people out there who are like, teacher, you want to be a teacher? Why are you being a teacher? You know, teachers don't make much money. Teachers don't do this. Teachers, you know, anyway. And I think teachers, you know, run into that quite a bit, and they have to really have a little bit of confidence about why they've done it. And have a reason for why they've done it. But, you know, I couldn't help but want to know where you were going with the thought and what happened to you next. Can you talk about choosing teaching in the classroom observations that helped kind of make you realize things could be done differently?
Sure. The stigma part, I mean, I dislike that stigma, of course. I mean, I think that teaching is a noble profession. I think it may be the most noble profession that exists. So the stigma that, you know, those who can't do teach is, you know, it's a hard pill to swallow. But, you know, as I discussed a little bit in the book, that it sort of fit my scenario, honestly. It fit where I was, unfortunately. I was in the shed. I had no job. I had no prospect. I was playing music a lot, but trained or qualified to do anything that I looked around and saw that I was interested in. So I can't really do anything. I haven't done anything. I teach. And then immediately, you know, when I would talk to people about this or share this revelation, almost everybody said the same thing. Like, you're going to teach? Why would you do that? Like, you're capable of doing other things. You're capable of doing more than teaching. And I thought, I don't like to be judged, so I had to figure out a way of not being judged for this. But I thought, man, you know, teaching is a really noble thing. There's arguably nothing more important in this country or any country than education. Getting the next wave, next generation ready to take over and do better. What is more important than that? Because the lack of that is the dissolution, the dissolving of our country kind of thing. All those types of thoughts went through my head. But I thought, oh gosh, I have to have a reason that I'm going to teach. And my reason was, I just want to be a really good dad someday. So if I learn how to teach, and if I teach, I have a better understanding of kids, I will be a really great dad. So that's what I would tell people. Again, it's the same thing, same mindset of calling my book the worst book about education ever written. It was like, oh, no, don't judge me for wanting to teach because I want to be a great dad. It's beyond reproach. How could anybody say, well, that's not a good idea? Like, well, nobody's going to say that.
Right.
So it's just a way to protect myself. And I'm not sure if that was actually the reason, or I just came up with an excuse. I did, that was my mindset back then. But classroom observations, in terms of doing new things, I would go into classrooms, and I observed tons of different classrooms. I still love observing classrooms. It's fascinating to me. There are a number of things fascinating to me. One of them is, I don't really know how to describe it, but and feeling the energy in different classrooms. Sometimes you go into a classroom and you're just like, wow, this is, you can't really explain it. Like, this feels really great. Kids seem to be really in tune. They're excited. They respect being here, that sort of thing. And then you walk into the classroom next door and it feels terrible. I mean, it's just like, oh, I feel, what is going on in here? But I don't get it. So part of my journey has been trying to figure out why those two classrooms feel different, and a lot of it lends itself to, well, this first classroom, there was a teacher that the students had a great relationship with and they wanted to work for that teacher. And the teacher made active learning environments. They made the classroom engaging. The kids were doing things. Whereas in the next classroom, the kids aren't doing anything. There's no creative aspect to it. There's no participation by the students in, okay, now we're all going to do this, or let's think through this and work on this together. So it just started to seem like that was the distinction between these two types of classrooms that I wanted to further explore. If you will, more active classrooms, more passive classrooms, and just getting a better understanding of that. And having observed lots of classrooms, you get more detailed, like what kinds of details these different classrooms have as well.
It's really interesting because reading your words during this and knowing lots of the stuff that you are involved in and have been over the years, that is all about the active classroom and the active student. You just see it developing. It's just kind of neat because that's, I could hear you just kind of looking back on some of those notes, those observation notes. I mean, because, you're so right. I mean, what you're talking about, that's probably one of the most interesting aspects of becoming an administrator in the same school where you taught, is that when you go in to observe colleagues' classes, you see them who they truly are when it comes to the kids. And some of them you go, wow. And some of them you go, wow, cool, it's one of those words you can use to mean different things, right?
That's right.
And and it's just one of those things. And I got to go back to something you said before. The stigma around teaching is one of the things that I got into originally to make kids interested in history. I mean, I was a history teacher for 9 years. I like history, although I never really wanted to admit that to my dad because he was always stopping at signs and reading those signs. And, we'd read everything in the museums and we'd stop and find, just out of the way monuments to go stop at. And but he really did make me like that stuff. I just never would admit it to him. And so now I've done the same thing to my family, which is amazing, too. But it's one of those things that I wanted to help kids get excited about learning history. And then as I became a teacher, I started understanding that there was so much more to it than that, that it became about helping them want to learn whatever that was. And, you know, and it's funny because that became part of my talk when people would say, you know, those goofy things that they say, or they say, teacher, man, what is, really? And just like you said, I've heard some of the same things, you know, and there, I've left my share of smoldering remains around. If somebody ever said to me, wow, you must really enjoy those summers off, because I have yet to have a summer off, because I always use my summers to go more to school. So,
yeah,
you know, it's anyway, I just good stuff there. I just know that those classroom observations and the things that you were noticing, just so impactful. You know, one of the things that
Jump in real quick. I just made me think of it. Something that I wanted to also point out in terms of this classroom observation thing. And maybe we'll touch on this in a second as well. But there's also many times in my experience with many teachers that I've interacted with, there is a difference between what teachers say they do in the classroom. What they say they do. I do all these projects and all these things, and then going to observe. Sometimes the story is a bit different. Because teachers, you know, we advocate for ourselves. We talk about our best lessons. We talk about our best ideas and that sort of thing. So that's an important thing as well, that if we're trying to help people be better, it's better to know the full truth. Yes, you're doing all these awesome things. How can we, for example, free up time for you to do more of these awesome things? So instead of once a month, you're doing them six times a month, those types of things. And knowing the full story through the classroom observation, unannounced classroom observations, in my experience, are best to get that, to help fill in those gaps of, yes, you're doing awesome things, but sometimes it's not as awesome. How can we make every day awesome?
Hey, this is the end of part one of my interview with Dr. Lodge McCammon, the author of the book, Schooled, The Story of an Education. Next week, the conclusion. Thanks for listening. See ya. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and host. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions for classroom teachers and school administrators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll share it with your friends.